I'm Bob Kennedy. I'm the steward on the tall ship Lady Washington.
How long have you been doing it?
I've been associated with the boat for about 6 years, and I've crewed for almost 19 months now.
What does it mean to be the steward?
I take care of all the needs of the passengers, the crew. I handle a manifest for the people coming on board. Take care of the office communications.
How'd you finish that?
I can multitask.
How'd you hear about the Lady Washington?
I have an interesting story about that. I started out... I've always loved tall ships.
Didn't you start with, "I've always loved tall ships"?
I've always loved tall ships, and I never had an interest in sailing whatsoever. And I'm also Haida. I'm Northwest Coast native. The original lady traded with my people for fur. They did not have a good relationship with my people. As a matter of fact, I can go into a long story about that. The original lady...
Oh, before you start, can you scoot in a little bit towards me more? Because I'm Janice. No. It'll be easier for the mic. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So your people?
Traded with the original lady. The original lady had two captains. Her first captain was Robert Gray, and her second captain was John Kendrake. Robert Gray came up and traded with the city of Skagway. It's now known as Ninstitz. It's a city on the south end of what you call Queen Charlotte Islands, what I call Haida Gwaii. He had a great time trading, got a lot of good furs for good prices. He sailed back to the base camp, which was Nootka Sound, Friendly Cove in Nootka Sound, and told John Kendrake about it. John Kendrake traded ships with Gray, and John Kendrake captained the lady up to Skagway to do some trading because he heard that the furs were such good quality and such good price.
Tell me about your people, though. Spell the name for me, too.
H-A-I-D-A. Haida.
I've never heard of them.
You never heard of the Haida? My goodness, where have you been?
Where are they?
What you call the Queen Charlotte Islands. They're the next large island up from Vancouver Island on the B.C. coast. They were traders. They were also, as all insular people are, they were kind of powerful. They made the largest canoes on the northwest coast. They made the some of the largest longhouses on the west coast, northwest coast. They made the tallest and best totem poles on the west coast. A lot of the old photos, turn of the last century's photos of villages with totem poles and are Haida villages.
So we've probably seen them.
Mm-hmm. Have you always known that you were a member of the tribe?
Oh, yeah, always.
Because Sarah just did a piece about Hawaiians, and a lot of people didn't know until later on.
Mm-hmm. No, I knew. Oh, yeah, I knew.
So then how did you find out about the Lady Washington?
I read a book called Raven's Cry, and it's the Haida history. From contact up through the middle of the last century. And it starts out with first contact, and the first contact was with John Kendrake, the captain of the Lady Washington. And that wasn't good. It was not happy.
What was it like when you say the first contact wasn't good?
Like I was saying, Kendrake came to trade. He came in on a laundry day. He had laundry hanging in the rigging to dry. Northwest Coast native tradition for trading is you bring your goods, you place it on the beach or next to the people. They grab what they want, take it back to their home, find something of equal value, bring it back, and then you barter. Well, the natives, the Haida, thought that that's exactly what was going on. So they went up, they started taking clothes. When three of Kendrake's best shirts went overboard, he blew up. He was a Quaker, he was a Bostonian, he was a Yankee. He was an ex-privateersman. So possessions meant a lot to him, and justice. He went and stormed into the city of Skagway and rounded up the chief, Koya, and one of the highborn males, Skulganese. He brought them back on board, and he lashed them to the guns, he tarred them, and he cut their hair. And the only time, there are only two times that a Haida, traditional Haida, cuts his hair, and that's when he's in mourning and when he's a slave. So, lost a lot of prestige, and if you know anything about the Northwest Coast natives, prestige means everything to them, everything. I've got to hand it to Kendrake. He continued trading. He could have easily, which later captains did, he could have easily held them captive and ransomed them off. But he continued trading because he was a good Quaker, a good Yankee. He had dispensed justice. But he traded at his prices, not the natives' prices.
So did the Haida, is that right? Haida. Did they continue trading after that?
Yes. Koya went back. Koya was let loose, went back to his village. But he spent at least one full year pashelshing, potlatching, trying to gain back respect and prestige. And Kendrick came back in the Lady Washington. And apparently he was counting his chickens before they hatched, because when he came in, he was either drunk or hungover. The records are a little fuzzy on that. And he anchored off of Ninstitz, off of Skagway. And dismissed the crew below deck. So there was only Kendrake and a gunner's mate on the quarterdeck of the Lady Washington. After a while, one Haida canoe pulled up on either side, and another Haida canoe pulled up on the other side. And after a while, there were about four or five canoes there. If you know anything about Northwest Coast Native canoe, and especially the Haida, their canoes can be 70 feet long. The Lady Washington is 68 feet long on deck. Each canoe handled 30 paddlers. That didn't include the up to 10 tons of cargo. So after a while, there were about 60 to 80 Haida on deck. And the gunner's mate was getting a little a little hinky about it, and was basically kind of elbowing Kendrake to get his attention. About that time, the crowd parted, and up walked Koya. And Koya started berating Kendrake, saying, you know, you've disgraced me and all that. He was doing that all in Haida. Kendrake was yelling to the crew below, saying, careful, guys, we've got a angry Indian here. Be prepared. Koya continued gaining as much face as possible, and then he reached under his cloak, pulled out a copper dagger, and took a swipe at Kendrake. And Kendrake was very slightly wounded, a flesh wound. And he basically came down that companionway, head over heels. As he came down that companionway, the gunner's mate went up the rigging, and the Haida had the boat. The Haida had the boat for about 3 hours. Koya was sitting there saying, I am a powerful chief. I took the boat over. This is my boat. I'm clearing up the disgrace that happened to me. And Kendrake was down here yelling at the crew in the hold, get ready, boys, they've taken the boat, I'll see what I can do. He squirreled around in here for a while and picked up a brace of pistols, and he broke through the cabin, the aft cabin wall, into the hold, where the crew was. About an hour and a half into it, the crew was ready to give up. They were going to turn the boat over to the Haida. Kendrake rallied the crew, brought him up on deck through the hatch, through the main hatch, and proceeded to slaughter between 40 and 60 of the Haida. And then he up anchored and sailed back and forth in front of Skagway for a couple more hours, shelling the village.
A lot of blood on this boat, huh?
Yeah, yep. And I had to do a lot of thinking before I got on board because of that.
Yeah, a lot of spirits here.
As a matter of fact, the first thing I had to do was I had to do a cleansing ceremony for myself and for the boat before I came on board. And I had to search the hearts and spirits of the people who were here and the organization. We have done wonderful things since then.
Swabbing the deck?
Yes. Well, it's constant. It's a wooden boat. There's constant maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can you describe before, when you said, you know, he came down here, what is this room? And describe it physically for people because they
sure.
can't see it.
This is the great cabin, the aft cabin on the Lady Washington. There is a rather steep companionway that leads from the quarterdeck down to the deck of the great cabin. We have two bunks, one port, one starboard for the bosun and bosun mate. We have one small cabin for the captain. And one very, very small cabin for the first mate.
These are cabins?
Those are cabins.
They look like closets.
They're even smaller than closets. As a matter of fact, our mate's closet is about the size of two telephone booths, one vertical and one horizontal.
People were shorter. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to ask to what this boat is as opposed to the First Lady Washington?
This boat is a 90-95% museum quality reproduction of the original Lady Washington on the outside. On the inside, we're very modern. We are quite proud of the fact that we conform to all Coast Guard regulations and we're a very safe boat.
So it's not the actual boat from the 17th.
It is not the actual boat.
But when was the first boat built, and why? What was the situation when it was built? Kind of why it was built?
She was a coastal trader. She was built around 1750 on the River Essex outside of Boston, Massachusetts. She was a UPS truck. She was a coastal trader. She carried goods up and down the East Coast. Trading everywhere from the Caribbean up to Canada.
And then when did she come over to this side of the coast?
She survived the Revolution, either as a privateersman or a letter of mark and reprisal.
What does that mean? I'm sorry. A letter of remark?
Of mark and reprisal. MARQUE. privateersman is a... my explanation of it is it's a rent-a-navy. You go to the government, you say, you're at war, my boat is at your disposal. They write you a writ, which allows you to take ships of the enemy, and as you take them, they go back to an admiralty court and are condemned at the admiralty court and sold, and the profits are split up between the ship and the government. A letter of mark and reprisal is, as a merchantman, if one of your ships were taken, you would go to the government and say, the enemy took this ship from me illegally, and my ship was worth this much. The government says you can go and take equal kind or more. They assign a value, and you can go out and raid or take that much. Primarily, privateersmen were purposely built ships. Letter of mark and reprisal were usually merchant ships that just preyed on ships that they ran across. Mm-hmm.
Is there something happening?
Let me see.
Okay.
Emmett, can I have you out for doing a radio interview?
Down here. Okay. Can I just get it real quick? Excuse me, guys.
And if you get close to the hatch when you're done.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, so when did she come over here?
She survived the American Revolution, survived the Depression following the Revolution, and in 1787, five guys in Boston had read something of very interesting in Cook's journal, where he sold one otter pelt in China for $700 in that era's money, $700, when a meal would cost a nickel. These five guys said, aha, and loaded up, used the Lady Washington and the Columbia Rediviva, the two ships of the oh, what would you call it? Wouldn't be a fleet. they were partners. And loaded them up with trade goods and sent them down around South America. And that was, they left Boston in 1787 and came up the coast in 1788.
And where did they go?
They went down south. Kendrake was a very slow and methodical captain. It took him a year to get here. They went down around Cape Horn. They were the first American ships. The Lady was the first American ship around Cape Horn. And then came up the west coast of South America, Central America, and Mexico. And as they did, they stayed as far away from the land as possible because the Pacific was a Spanish lake at the time. And if they had put into port, they would have been seized. So their first landfall was Tillamook, what they named Murderer's Cove.
And why did they name it that?
Because they took so long coming up the west coast, they needed water. They landed in, they made landfall around Tillamook. Gray was in command of the Lady at the time. He bounced her across the bar at on Tillamook to get water and cut some grass for the goat on board. Nancy, by the way, is her name. She's the first first goat to circumnavigate the world. They went on shore to
somebody else is coming down.
That's JB, our first mate. And I'll show him how small the cabin is.
Mess.
That's okay.
Okay.
The size of two telephone booths, if you can imagine that. One standing vertically, like a telephone booth would. One laid down on its side that connects to the first one at the top of the booth. The laying down on the side one, top of the booth, connects to halfway up on the side of the other one and goes in. So it enabled for me to climb into bed, I have to go from my vertical telephone booth and get in little overlapping bit, and then stick my feet into the coffin. So,
and you share it with the starboard generator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not claustrophobic.
Oh, I'm not entirely. No.
So, what does the first mate do here?
Bit of everything.
You're sewing something on right now.
I am. It's my hat, you know.
You have a three-corner hat.
Tricorner,
sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you get that?
Where'd I get it?
Yeah.
Boat had a few on board, so I grabbed one.
How long you been first mate?
I've been first mate on and off for about 3 years now. I've just recently become licensed first mate. And I've got my captain's license, so I can work as a licensed mate offshore and a captain here in inland waters.
What made you want to come on this boat?
This was the first boat that I ever sailed on, and she's kind of my sweetheart. This boat concentrates on the sail training portion of our job a lot more than a lot of the other vessels do. So we actually teach people how to sail, not just pretend we teach people how to sail. which is a problem I found with several other vessels.
So is that what's going to happen on the cruise, is you're going to have people actually sailing?
Yes.
Oh, really?
The Lady Washington is a very, very good sailboat and an absolutely horrid powerboat. So we sail whenever and wherever possible. We sail between 320 and 340 times a year.
What do you do on the Lady Washington?
We sail. We,
we when you're sailing to somewhere, why are you sailing to somewhere?
Usually, well, what we do is we split the year in half. One half of the year, the summer half of the year, we spend anywhere between Astoria, Oregon and Skagway, Alaska, doing things like these dockside tours. We have run programs for at-risk youth. This year we were busy with Tall Ships 2005, and what we're most proud of is we went up to Opitsit with the Tlaquit people and had a reconciliation. We helped heal a 200-year-old wound.
Oh, what was that like? I mean, how long was that, and what was involved in it?
We have had an association with one of the direct descendants of Robert Gray. Will Twombly. He was touched by his family's history, and he had found out that Robert Gray had burned down a village of Opitsit in with the Tlaquit people, Chief Wakinamish's village, and he wanted to make restitution. He wanted to do a remembrance. He wanted to reconcile, and they got in touch with the Tlaquit people and with the direct descendants of Wakinamish, and about 10 of Will's family came all the way, including members that cousins and nieces from Manchester, England, and came up to Opitsit and asked for forgiveness, and there was a big pashelsh and a big potlatch, and it was very healing.
That's great. So I wanted to ask you about, so Lady Washington came over here for, to let you do whatever you're doing. Lady Washington came over here for furs, was the initial thing.
Absolutely.
How long did that go on, and then what other trades did she get involved in?
Absolutely no other trades. She was over here from 1788 to about 1798, going back and forth across the Pacific between Washington State, Hawaii, and what would be Washington State, Hawaii, and China. Trying to carry on a fur trade.
Can you describe the route, I guess?
Absolutely. Most of the early fur traders were based out of Nootka Sound because that's where Cook found his, and it was a very good anchorage. It was under nominally Spanish control at the time. They would base out of Nootka, sail up and down the west coast as far as south as Astoria and as far north as Cook Inlet, and trade with the natives, and take the boatloads of fur across the Pacific to Macau or China, or to Hong Kong, what would be Hong Kong, and with a stop in Hawaii along the way.
So were there Chinese and Hawaiians that you know about who came and settled here?
Settled here, yes. Absolutely.
What are some of the accounts, I guess?
I know personally that there were a lot of Pacific Islanders who ended up in Haida Gwaii. Also know that there are stories of boats that washed up on Haida Gwaii from China, pre-contact.
When's pre-contact?
1492.
You mentioned that there were some Chinese sailors who were on the Lady Washington,
absolutely,
or ships like it. Would you
absolutely
talk about that?
The Lady Washington is crewed with, the original Lady Washington was crewed with between 12 and 15 men. And there was a constant leak of sailors off the boat because the lady was engaged in the fur trade and with trade in China. A lot of the sailors would jump ship in China and go to a homeward-bound ship. They would replace those sailors with Chinese.
And were the Chinese willing?
Yes, absolutely.
So they got a wage just like everybody mm-hmm. else?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They got a wage. I don't know whether it was like everyone else's. The lady, as you see her now, is the way she was rigged in 1791. Before this, she was a sloop, which is a single-masted sailing vessel. She got changed to this rig in China with Chinese labor in 1791.
I was wondering what kind. Oh, sorry. I was going to follow up with what kind of a life would that have been for a sailor?
It would have been a rough life, but it would have been a good life. As a sailor, you got three meals a day. Granted, they weren't much or weren't tasty, but you got three meals a day. You didn't live with your farm animals, but you lived with sailors.
Can you describe like a day in the life? What would that have been like?
You would have been on watches. We run 4 hours on, 8 hours off, but that's a much more modern watch schedule than what would have been carried on there. That is under sail. There would have been constant maintenance. As you came on board, you saw we had people up in the rigging taking care of maintenance on this boat. It was, there was very little free time.
You're constantly working. So how long did it take to get to these places? We don't have that concept because now we got planes, you know, everything's fast. So what was that like?
How long out on the sea?
4 to 8 months.
Okay, from where to where?
From 4 to 8 months from the northwest coast of China. It could be 8 to 12 months from Boston to the northwest coast.
I was just thinking, so if we were to do a trade route, you're saying they go up along the northwest coast, and then they go to Hawaii, and then they go to Macau? So how much time is there in between?
Okay, they would have, it would have taken 8 months to a year to get to the northwest coast from Boston. Then it took 6 to 8 weeks to 10 weeks. We're talking 18th century time here. so I can't give you days or hours. It's what we affectionately call brig time. To get to Hawaii, and then another 2, 3, 4 months to get to China, depending on wind, wave, typhoons.
And then you do it all over again?
You do it all over again. But there was a good reason to do it all over again. In the first 10 years of the fur trade, it was not uncommon to turn a 3,000% profit.
Did sailors make a lot of money? Probably more than they were leaving behind.
Exactly. They could make enough to put themselves up in a small pub and never have to sail again. Or
a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So is there a sailor type? What type of people would become sailors?
What kind of man did you need to be back then?
Healthy, young. When I teach the life of a sailor to the kids, I point out that if I was a sailor back then, I would have been dead for 20 years.
So describe what kind of a man opted to do this? Work.
In the American Merchant Navy, opportunists, a lot of the captains had started out as seamen. They were profit driven.
I mean, adventure, health, profit.
You have to understand that people back then, 99% of the people in the 1700, late 18th century, early 19th century. Never went more than 20 miles from home. These people were given a chance to go see the world. They could put up with privation, but they would see Hawaii.
They, how how long was their life average?
35 to 40, 45.
Would you say the average lifespan was?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, would
no,
you
could
say
you
that?
Say that?
The average lifespan was usually between 35, 40, 45, around in there.
But that was old back then, too, wasn't it? I mean, they say in Shakespeare's time, if you lived to be, you know, 35, that was
mm-hmm.
a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's only 100 years difference. So.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why Ben Franklin dazzled Paris.
One of the reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you also mentioned going through Hawaii and that there was some mm-hmm. point when I went through Hawaii and started the sandalwood trade. Could
Absolutely.
You talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, what's the sandalwood? Can you explain the sandalwood trade?
Kendrick basically established it.
Sandalwood,
yes.
Go ahead.
Kendrick basically established the sandalwood trade. Kendrick was a Yankee. Everything, yeah, to understand Kendrick, you have to understand that he was a Yankee. Everything he did for a profit. Or to make a profit. When he came across from, on his first trip from the West Coast to China, he stopped in Hawaii, saw this forest of sandalwood, and said, this is great stuff. I'm going to leave a sailor here. Going to tell him that he has to, I'll be back to pick up a load of lumber.
Just left him there.
And Kendrick sailed off. He came back on the next voyage, and all the trees were standing, and the sailor was gone.
Why?
Going from uptight Puritan Boston 1780s to Hawaii... He went native.
He found paradise in it.
Exactly. He found
That's
a sailor's
funny,
paradise.
Like, oh, why isn't he here?
Mm-hmm. Well, Kendrick, not willing to give up on a prophet, put another guy in the forest with a hatchet and supplies and said, I'll be back. And he left. And he came back. And there were a couple of trees down, and the guy was gone. This happened one more time before he finally got a load of sandalwood. He left a few guys there and got a load of sandalwood and opened up the sandalwood trade between Hawaii and China.
So he stayed there this time and made sure they mm-hmm. did it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Did he have any, what was the sandalwood trade like? Did it go on for a long time? Or
and
how did it affect trade?
That is something I would like to know. All I know is that it was a very important trade item, and I'm sorry I don't have the history on it.
Well, I think that didn't the Chinese buy it? Because,
they loved, they made great boxes and wonderful furniture, all for the Mandarins.
And a lot of it was from that time period, mm-hmm. too, from 1700 through 1800,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it went to Europe from there, mm-hmm. from China.
So. Mm-hmm. And back to Boston.
It was interesting to me how much, the more we do this history, how much there was globalization in those early days.
The American Revolution was the first global war.
And then after that, it's like, there's all this trade, you know?
There was trade.
Hold
on. Hold on. The native in me has to point out that the Haidas were trading up and down the coast. We were trading all the way from the Russian River all the way up to the Aleutians. And I have stories of the Haida going to Hawaii.
Oh, tell us.
I mean,
you can't tell the stories.
Mm-hmm.
But there were there is a precedent for
mm-hmm.
that. So.
Absolutely. We were traders. The dentalium, which is a trade shell, a very specific species of dentalium, lives 70 feet below the surface of the ocean off of Vancouver Island. It has been found in Anastasi ruins, and it has been found at the foot of the Great Lakes. There was a great trading network going on North America.
I think that's a good thing to bring out.
Especially mm-hmm. that extended to Hawaii.
And that also explains why there was such problems between the the traders in the first contact, because you have two different, very powerful trading cultures clashing and both trying to make a profit. The natives got a lot out of the trade goods from Boston. They got chisels that, so that they could make canoes better. A lot of the Northwest canoes were Haida up and down the coast. They could make better houses. They could do better trade goods. The beads that they traded for were used as money up and down the coast. The beads that they used were used for trading up and down the coast. They were money. Each bead had a specific value. Mm-hmm.
Were there reports of Chinese also in the Haida?
Absolutely. There are there are pieces of Chinese pottery, porcelain that is found on the coast of Haida Gwaii, and there are accounts of strange boats with men washing up on shore.
And I also wanted to ask about, I don't know if there is one, but I remember hearing about how Japanese sailors and other Asian sailors would get washed up in the ocean or get lost, and people would pick them up. And I was wondering kind of if there was more of a kinder sense among sailors than there might be among nations?
There is always a brotherhood of sailors. I mean, anybody who risks their life at sea will do anything else, anything anybody needs who also risks their life at sea. Sure.
But did you know something about the Japanese sailors getting washed
1947, yeah. There was quite a famous case of them washing up on the BC coast.
1947?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also,
do you know any earlier history?
I have stories of pre-contact.
Yeah, that's what we're mm-hmm. more interested in.
If you could mm-hmm. say, like, a general kind of...
there are... I have several stories of strange vessels, non-Northwest Coast native vessels, washing up on the shores with people on board.
Of Japanese vessels?
Or might be Japanese.
You're not quite sure. There's just accounts of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to think about those boats, though, because I've seen Chinese boats and I've seen Japanese boats.
You don't understand the Chinese or Japanese or Chinese boats were the most technologically advanced boats of their time. They had watertight compartments. They had battened sails. They had immersed rudders, fully balanced immersed rudders. They were incredible seagoing vessels. Quite a recent book, 1491 is I think the name of it, about the Chinese exploration of the Pacific.
Yeah, the train's going.
Yeah, if you could just kind of say again maybe the things that the Chinese invented having to do with water. I mean, you just mentioned a few of them right there,
mm-hmm.
but just once the train goes by.
No,
hopefully it's not a long train.
The idea that there was agency.
That was trading, that was, you know, global, mm-hmm. it was, you know, there was a lot of stuff happening. And we always think, oh, until the white man came, you know,
mm-hmm.
nothing was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to...
thank you for giggling.
I mean, that's the assumption, mm-hmm. or presumption.
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
oh, JB.
That,
yeah, just
saying. JB's great.
So if you want to mention, again, you were talking about some of the inventions, or at least...
The Chinese ships. What was it about the Chinese ships?
Chinese ships were incredibly seaworthy. They had watertight compartments before they were even thought of on the in Western civilization. They had battened sails, which sail much more efficiently than unbattened sails in most situations. They had balanced rudders. They had the compass before the West.
So it's not surprising that they came all the way here.
And it's not surprising that they survived all the way across the Pacific. Again, the 1491, the book about the exploration of the Pacific by the Chinese.
Yeah. Do you know much about John Mears, too? Oh, no. Uh-oh. Oh, no. We were going to get him started. Well, there was a construction project that he brought, like, the first people, the coolie, you know, labor. I don't know if we need to get into that, but it was just kind of one of those side stories.
One of my favorite books is, if you want to sum up Mears, the best way to sum it up is a title of a book about John Mears, and it's called Almost a Hero. John, yeah, John Mears is a wonderful sad sack. He came as close to being a brilliant man as he could possibly be and fail miserably at it. Cape Disappointment, the northern cape of the mouth of the Columbia River, was named by John Mears because he sailed. He had spent a full sailing season looking for the river, and he sailed as far south as Cape Disappointment and found out and gave up. And I'm disappointed that cape is not the river. And within sight of the mouth of the Columbia River, he turned around and went home.
If you could mention his idea about bringing Chinese laborers and then building the Northwest America.
If John Mears wouldn't have been British, he would have made a great Yankee. He was very much into making a profit. He wanted to open up he wanted to break the fur monopolies that the British Empire had handed out. And to do that, he sailed under several different flags of several different nations. He brought over Chinese laborers from China to come to Nootka Sound and build a fort and a ship that he had pre-assembled in China, broken down, put in the hold of his ship, and shipped over.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the ship and that they built? And
is it getting you?
That was the, as I remember, that was the Northwest America. Yes, and
it was the Northwest America. The Adventure was the other one.
The Adventure was the one that Robert Gray brought over and built in Adventure Cove, which we just visited.
So could you just say where Nootka Sound is?
Nootka Sound is about halfway up the west coast of Vancouver Island.
It's because you've mentioned it a few times.
Oh, so. Absolutely. Sure.
You want to get back to the Lady Washington? Or?
Sure, yes. Let's get back to the Lady Washington. So do
we
you...
We've gone to Hawaii.
Also talking, we've gone to Hawaii.
Gone to Hawaii.
Let's go to Japan.
Went to China.
Let's go to Japan. One thing I was reading was when... I guess you could also just first talk about Lady Washington going to Japan, but then also that I guess there was a letter that was written by a Chinese sailor on the Lady Washington?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a Japanese man, it was a Chinese man writing... Oh, okay.
So that's the first going, but then that's where I wanted to go.
Long time ago.
about what time period do you think?
As I remember, it was about 1793, 94. The fur trade was getting a little saturated at the time. The Chinese were getting smart to the fact that people were bringing furs over for trading, and it was going to be an open pipeline soon. So they were bargaining hard. The agent, the captains were acting as their own agents, and he didn't like the fact that they were getting bum prices from the Chinese, what he thought were bum prices from the Chinese. So he, Kendrake, said, I'm going to try marketing them someplace else. He had heard about Nippon, about Japan, and...
Hello?
Are they coming in or out?
Down or no?
We're still doing interviews.
Okay.
What do you need?
Manifest.
Yeah. Okay. Is it that time?
Is it time to sail?
People on the dock with cash. So.
Okay. Oh. So what time is it?
About 2 to 5.
Okay. I have to get ready for the sail.
Oh, I thought it was 6. Okay.
Yes, but I have to check passengers on an hour early. Okay, that's part of the steward's job. Hat.
Will there be time to interview during
the
sail?
No, not at all.
okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, okay.
Don't take anything I say seriously.
Uh-oh.
And a huge trade system set up over the whole continent.
You guys get along good.
No, we hate each other.
What did she just shout?
Main course.
What does that mean?
Food.
Oh, so you guys are eating now?
He's having dinner.
Oh, you have, don't let us keep you. Do you need to have dinner too?
They save dinner for me until after the sale starts.
Okay. And I go down to eat. He'd be out checking in pastures right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alrighty. So we were talking about...
The 3 hours. So those 3 hours, 3 hours a day, the rest of the day was for building culture, for storytelling.
Well, probably you don't have to work as much if you don't need as much, too.
Need as much? What more do you want other than houses that could be 130 feet long, food to eat... to access the Northwest Coast natives did pashelshes, they did potlatches where they would give away wealth to others because they were so wealthy. What else do you need?
That's what I mean, because yeah. There was a sense that, you know, other cultures needed things.
Mm-hmm.
Good times.
Mm-hmm. We had good times. That's what pashelshes were all about. Mm-hmm.
Looks like Sarah's coming down. Thank you. So, do you want to ask questions about the Japanese?
Yes. So, what happened when... So, you were talking about they was looking for another place to trade.
He was looking for another fairer fields, greener fields. John Kendrick, the captain of the Lady Washington. He was looking for greener fields. Like I say, the Chinese field was getting a little saturated, and they were getting savvy to the fact that the pipeline was not going to close down anytime soon on the fur trade, so they cut the value. Kendrick heard about Nippon, about China, Japan, and he decided to go over there. Well, he knew it was a closed country, he knew it was hard to get to. And he knew it was hard to get to.
Can you start from it was a closed country?
He knew it was a closed country. He knew that it would be hard to get into.
Okay, go ahead.
But he also knew that he could use excuses to get in. And he used the excuse that he was blown in by an ill wind, whether it was a typhoon or not. And he hit the one of the southernmost cities of Honshu at the time. I think it's pronounced Kashimoto. Sailed into the bay, dropped anchor, and just stayed there, waiting for the Japanese to come out to him. And the Japanese didn't want to come out to him because they wanted nothing to do with it or to get any of the local government mad at them by contacting them. So for a day or two, it was kind of a standoff. And eventually, one of the officials came out and... Japanese came out to the boat. At that time, Kendrick had a couple of Chinese crewmen on board. So the Japanese official was educated enough that he also knew Chinese so that they had a common language to talk. But they were not highly educated. There were a lot of slight mistranslations and misunderstandings. Kendrick made his intentions known, saying that he had a boatload of trade goods and a boatload of fur and wanted to trade in Japan. And he hadn't counted on the fact that the Japanese don't wear furs. The Japanese don't.
I think that's your phone, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. No. We have cell phones on board.
Okay. So
mm-hmm.
Let's wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, see, you're...
It's ringing again.
You're really impatient. You must wait for a while.
Sounds like an ice cream truck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He hadn't counted on the fact that the Japanese don't wear fur. It's considered bad manners and bad form to wear fur.
Yucky, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unclean.
Yep. He hung around for almost 2 weeks, between 10 days and 2 weeks. During that time, they did a little bird hunting with their guns on board, and the Japanese didn't understand why they were shooting these beautiful birds. Kendrick went on board, or went to town and got his hair cut. Kendrick had red hair, so he was kind of a curiosity. He was there long enough for someone to paint his portrait. His portrait is hanging in a memorial shrine in Kashimoto. And it's a very, very good portrait of Kendrick looking very Japanese with red hair. In that shrine, they also have a lock of Kendrick's red hair. They found out that it was going to be a failed trade mission, so they up anchored and left. And all during this time, the local officials were talking to all the next level up officials, and it finally got back to Tokyo. And 3 days after Kendrick left, the Shogunate army showed up to boot him out of the boot him out of Japan. So Kendrick was lucky then.
So is there anything else, any other stories you know about Asian sailors or Hawaiian sailors?
Hawaiian? Well, the lady...
Well, related to the lady.
The Lady Washington, John Kendrick's last breaths were in Hawaii. He and the Jackal, one of the British trading vessels, one of his competitors, and it was a very competitive market, were in Hawaii, and one of Kamehameha's relatives was consolidating power in Hawaii and was at war with another family there, and he asked the Jackal and the Lady Washington for assistance in putting down the uprising, gun manpower, gunpowder. They offered to help. They did help. Kamehameha's relatives was victorious. And you have to remember that the Lady Washington was 10 years out of the American Revolution. We were still under the Articles of Confederation. We were very much a young country and very much an upstart and very proud of the fact. And Kendrick asked for a salute to the American flag. The Jackal was a British ship, a competitor, and the Jackal decided that they would give him a salute. And custom at that time was the Jackal was a armed ship. It had about 10 guns, 10 to 15 guns. Numbers varied. Usually what they did is they had about 3 guns set aside specifically for signaling, and what they would do was have gunpowder but no shot in those guns, so that they could signal. So the gunner mate went up and set off the first one, counted to 20, went over to set off the next one, it went off, counted to 20, went to set off the third one, and it misfired. And when you're doing a salute, the timing between gunfire is very important. Well, seeing as that one misfired, he went immediately to the next gun and set it off. And it was loaded. It had shot in it. And that shot skipped across the harbor, right across the harbor into the aft cabin of the Lady Washington and killed Kendrick and the first mate.
Well, that's how he met his end.
The Haida have a long memory.
So then also, just one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do like what a typical day would be or what typical jobs would be on the ship.
On the ship?
Can you start with on the ship?
Sure. Can I help?
I have to print out a page.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, a blank page?
Yeah.
Okay. There should be a blank page inside the silver doodah. Okay.
I'll stop it for a second. Sorry.
Change the
lens. Oh, that's okay. Okay, so we're rolling again.
The typical day and the jobs you do.
Typical day, you would be woken up for your watch, and you would be sleeping in amongst the cargo because there was, again, the Lady Washington was a big UPS truck. All the space was utilized to carry cargo, so you were slung your hammock either in a very, very small forecastle, which is a room about a quarter of this size, or you slept among the cargo. You would wake up in the morning, you and your mates would try and find, get some food, which usually consisted of salt junk, which is heavily salted meat that, to give you an idea of how salty it was to preserve it, they would drag it behind the boat in barrels that had holes in it to wash the salt off. They would eat hardtack, which is nothing but flour, salt water, and lots of heat over an extended period of time. It's a flour brick. and water that had possibly been in the barrel for 3 months, 6 months. They would eat that. Then they would stand their watch, handle sails, do maintenance, splice line, paint. You got to remember this is their home, and unlike your home, if you don't take care of your home, you may get a hole in the wall or something like that. On a boat, if you don't take care of your home, it's a long walk back. You swim a long way. So maintenance was a very important part.
What about personal hygiene? How did they go to the bathroom?
I will show you later. If you take a look at the Lady Washington, right behind the figurehead, there are three rails that connect the figurehead to the bow of the boat, bow of the brig. And they are the foot rail, the back rail, and the hair rail. The foot rail is where you put your feet, the back rail is what you sit on, and the hair rail is what you lean your back against and you let fly. It was basically an 18th century bidet.
And you let the water do the work, huh?
I will show you. We have here a Mr. Scrungy, which is a piece of baggy wrinkle, which is a piece of line that has been unlaid and has been wrapped around some seine twine. And that piece of line and seine twine is hung over the side of the boat, and you use that.
So you do sort of a tour and tell people all about that before you go out?
No.
Just to go out?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we'll ask you about stuff then. I just was, yeah, that's a good reason why there aren't women. There weren't women, you know. I don't think anyone would want to put up with that.
There were women. There were more women than people expect.
Tell us about the women.
The fastest time between New York and San Francisco was done by the Flying Cloud. The captain was down with an illness, I think it was 2 or 3 days out of New York, and his wife took over, and she drove the ship to San Francisco at better time than anyone ever had before. Yep. There were many women sailors.
We just don't know who they are?
Yes.
Were they usually, like, the wives of someone who was on board, and then they'd get to know about it, or did they...
Wives, nod, nod, wink, wink.
Okay. Partners, life
wives
partners.
And friends.
Yeah, okay. You want to call it that, okay.
Association.
Mm-hmm, yes, of convenience.
Well, that's so interesting, but they would take over when the captain was sick or something.
Mm-hmm.
But not anybody did it by trade.
Okay. I won't go that far, but
okay.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I didn't mm-hmm. know, because I knew there were women pirates, mm-hmm. you know, they were very famous ones, mm-hmm. but, yeah.
You don't come fully formed into that profession, okay? There were women sailors.
That's so interesting, cool. though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And of course, today, maybe you could say that the Lady Washington.
The Lady Washington, we have no quota system, but most of the time we sail with a 50-50 crew, and we prefer it that way. When there are too many men on board, you die of testosterone poisoning, and when there are too many women, you suffocate from estrogen poisoning. So a good 50-50 mix is what makes the boat happy. What makes Martha happy? Martha's the boat, Lady Washington.
So tell us about this volunteer program.
We have more than a few different ways to get involved with the lady. The path that most people take is a program we call 2 weeks before the mast, where you spend $350, you come on board for 2 weeks, and you quite literally, and in the truest sense of the word, learn the ropes. You become a crew member. You are up in the rigging. You are hauling lines. You are tending sail. You are standing watch. You become a crew member of the Lady Washington. We have 8 volunteers on board today. At the end of those 2 weeks, you graduate from being a deckhand to being a topman. And that's a skilled position on a tall ship.
And do you have to pass the test?
Yeah, there have been people who have not made the 2 weeks. There have been more than a few.
What's the criteria?
We have personal evaluations at the end of the 2 weeks done by the officers on board.
Well, I mean for the volunteers.
Well, yeah, what kind of person? Test?
Exactly. We have evaluations done by the officers of the volunteers at the end of the 2 weeks.
No, I mean before the 2 weeks. Is anybody can volunteer?
We've had everyone from Esther, who is on board now, who sailed this boat to the Caribbean and back for the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. She was 14 at the time. All the way up to an 82-year-old lady who is a wonderful volunteer who is up in the rigging also.
But do you need to be able-bodied?
You do have to have a note from your doctor saying that you can perform the slightly rigorous physical activities.
That's cool.
And you have to be able to sleep really close to a lot of other people for 2 weeks.
You can't be a snorer. You can't be a snorer,
yep.
huh?
Oh, we've had snorers.
You want to hold the mic? I want to take a picture of you guys.
Sure.
Okay. Here.
And speak of the devil, there's our Esther right there.
Hello. Oh, thank you. Somebody turned it off. I think the camera
came
on.
Well, the
way
thing
out.
Is, no, the thing is, it's a consumable. Oh, we do not have dock power here.
Okay.
And if you can live without it.
Right, you should.
Mm-hmm. Yes, consumables. Electricity, water, black water, space. We worry about consumables all the time.
What else do you miss being on the ship?
I don't miss a thing. I just got back from time driving to Seattle, and it reminded me how much I don't miss Seattle. I don't miss anything. They're getting me off the boat because I've been on for 18 months, and they think I need a rest. Life is safe inside the yellow rails. Outside the yellow rails, it's scary. I have no desire to go back. I would gladly work this boat as long as I'm a valuable asset to the boat.
What do you do when you're not on the boat?
Want to get back on the boat. I work with the best people in the world. I work with crew, and crew is closer than family. I have a family of over 450 people on this boat. I entrust my life. I put my life in their hands every day. If they don't belay a line correctly, I can die. And I trust these people. Every stinking one of them.
Sorry. I just ruined that take. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Every stinking
water. That's right.
It means literally, right?
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, these people are aces. I won't use the word hero, because being a hero means that you've gone through the worst day of your life. And hero is something that somebody else calls you, not...
Mm-hmm. Well, how long are you going to have your break? Are you coming back?
I'm coming back.
Do you have to wait to come back?
Oh, they've assigned me 2 months. I'll be back.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're on here, they'll take care of you and feed you. As long as you're working the ship.
As I am a paid member of the crew, and yes.
But you're going to be back home for 2 months?
Home. No, I'm going to be away from home for 2 months.
I gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to work at the seaport. Straightening out some office problems. I spent almost 3 months getting the ship ready for Tall Ships Challenge 2005, doing the liaison work for that. I want to carry on doing that for all the ports that we visit in California and Oregon.
You visit schools and stuff?
Yes, we...
You'd be really good.
I don't personally visit schools, but we bring schools down to the boat, and we take them out sailing. That's what we do during the winter half of the year. We go down to California and teach. We go out sailing usually twice a day, 3-hour sails, 30 to 40 students, and we teach. Last year we had 14,000 school kids aboard.
What kind of ages?
We specialize in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, but we've tailored our program all the way down to kindergarten and high school.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I bet they love it.
Do you do any writing or anything?
If you've visited the website and if you see CHB, that's me.
That's you? Okay.
Crazy Hi to Bob.
Well, we wouldn't have known that. I was curious too. We saw excerpts of different captain's journals on the website. Is there anything that you know of, or somebody could tell us? Was there any accounts of the Chinese or the Hawaiians or the Native Americans? Anything we could dramatize?
The best that I've found is Raven's Cry by Christy Harris, still in print at the University of Washington Press.
So they have captain's accounts. Yeah,
no,
there,
this is the Haida side of the history. Hail Columbia is a very good book on the lady and the Columbia and Robert Gray and Kendrake in the first American contact on the West Coast. It just went out of print, but you can pick it up on Amazon for about $14.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious on your website if you drew from, on or the Lady Washington website, drew from those books.
The 6 years before I became crew member, I was shoreside support and historian, and I poured over as many books as possible that I can find, kind of squirreled myself away in the Suzzle Library. Finding stuff.
I was just thinking on your 2 months, you could probably write a whole... That'd be kind of cool, though.
One of our captains is already doing that.
Picture of you with your hat on.
This is my Sunday go-to-meeting hat.
Oh, so we shouldn't take pictures.
No, this is my Sunday go-to-meeting hat.
What's your regular hat?
When I'm out in front of the crowd, I wear this, and when I... go join the crew, because first and foremost, I'm a topman, I'm a sailor. Second, I'm a steward, and so I have to go up in the rigging. And when you go up in the rigging, nothing can come off of you, fall out of the rigging. So I have a lanyard hat that I wear.
Do you ever, braid your hair into the ribbons, you know, like we used to do?
With this hairline,
well,
it looks absolutely silly.
Well, Also, what hat do you regularly wear?
You will see it.
Oh, cool. All right.
I brought that hat along. I brought that hat along, and the captain wears that often. That was made by a little Ohio friend of mine.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very authentic.
That's because it is. Yeah.
So, Bob, is there anything else you want to say while we're sitting here? Or?
Come on down to the lady. We that's...
How do you call people on board? Are you going to do that? I want to get some of that.
No, we're a break, not a hoy.
What do you call the Lady Washington?
I call the Lady Washington home, first and foremost. Second, she's a brig. She has two masts with square sails on the two masts with a spanker main. That's a brig. When you talk about ships in this time period, a ship is a very specific vessel. It is a vessel with three masts, square sails on all three masts. So we are a brig.
We're a brig. It's
a brig.
A ship. It's not a boat.
It's a brig.
It's a brig. It's a brig. But see, we always think of a brig as a bad thing because it's like the jail, you know?
It's all safe inside the yellow rails.
How did that happen?
Because the brigs, just like the Lady Washington, is a UPS truck. She was the Ford F-150 pickup of the era. They were thick in the water. And when they became unseaworthy, they would use them as prisons. They would anchor them out in the bay and pile the prisoners on board. So,
and that's where we got it.
Ergo, henceforth.
You're going to have to pay. I mean, UPS should pay you. You mentioned it like four times. It's like you should be getting some kickback there. The UPS boat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anything else you want to say? We'll probably ask you more questions topside, right?
Yeah, oh, dang it.
You've got to give
I
us, like, all the
that.
Terms. I
mean, oh, you will get
we
terms.
We will get all the terms. Okay,
good.
You will be so confused.
Okay, we better save the battery.